Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy
on Seattle Sports Station.
Powered by Kitsap Credit Union. Streaming through the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
All right, the Robbie Ray conundrum, that's been the theme of the show so far, and we're continuing it right now with Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. Brandon, how's it going?
Good. How are you guys doing?
We're well. We were just talking about Robbie Ray. Now, Brandon, we began our show by saying that none of us necessarily regret the decision to sign Robbie Ray because we all think that at the time it was the right decision by the Mariners. In fact, it was a good, aggressive decision in free agency. Before I even start kind of, you know, moving forward as to how Robbie Ray can kind of course correct, is that still how you see the signing, where it's something that you're like, I don't regret at all what they did and they were right to do it?
No, because hindsight's 20/20, obviously, and I know that a lot of people are like, well, they should have went out and signed Kevin Gausman, and Kevin Gausman was a guy that they were actually tied to and instead of Robbie Ray. Like, we didn't really hear any rumblings about Robbie Ray until the signing was kind of first reported, but obviously Kevin Gausman's having a great season for Toronto, but Robbie Ray's coming off a Cy Young award-winning season. Like, you went out and you signed, at the time, the best pitcher available on the market. It just unfortunately hasn't worked out for you so far.
Well, it certainly hasn't worked out for you so far. Brandon, what would you say to people that point to Robbie Ray and say, if this guy was better, the Mariners would be in a very different position?
Well, you have a bottom five bullpen right now, so I point to that. The bullpen has not been very good this year after being such a strength for the team last season. And obviously the lineup, you only have a handful of guys who are hitting. Kyle Lewis getting re-injured is obviously a big dent because he came in and kind of gave you a spark and helped lengthen the lineup a little bit, but you still only got a few guys going. And one of the guys that you were really counting on to be a key contributor and be arguably the guy was Jesse Winker. And that's kind of like Robbie Ray, one of the bigger expectation guys, and just hasn't quite worked out. So obviously Robbie Ray was brought in to anchor the rotation and be the guy leading the charge there. And there's been some good things and he's given you innings, and for a lot of it, it is quality innings, but if you're pointing to Robbie Ray as, like, the problem with this team right now, no. There's a lot more going on.
Yeah, obviously it's not to discredit, you know, the fact that Robbie has not, you know, lived up to expectations. But, yeah, I think that it's a very good point that you make. Now, Brandon, we talked about this, I feel like it was last week. Correct me if I'm wrong, but we kind of talked about Robbie Ray and the perplexing situation that is his performances, because he's so dominant for every single inning except for one per outing. I mean, it's hard to watch because you see it coming. The command starts to slip. He starts to walk guys and get guys on base. I mean, Brandon, I mean, how do you even fix that? How do you even address that? Robbie Ray, you know, after the game was like, I things are feeling good coming out of my hand. I mean, what do you do?
Oh, it's tough. And obviously that's what Robbie and this coaching staff are trying to work through. And I thought that Jerry DePoto this morning with Mike kind of talked about it, where Robbie's trying to be kind of perfect in those situations where it does start to get away from him a little bit. And unfortunately, if you're trying to be perfect in baseball, you're gonna be really disappointed. That's not how this sport works at the plate or on the mound or anything like that. So it's weird. I'm working on a story for SeattleSports.com that'll be up later today, just kind of diving through some of these numbers. And it's so interesting, Jake, because so many of the numbers, both the advanced numbers and the non-advanced numbers, like the basic statistics, aside from his ERA, they're really, really similar to what he did last year. It's just that one big inning has really been an issue for him. And one issue that really is kind of coming back to bite him is the walks. The walk rate is up a bit from last year. He walked 2.4 per nine last year. That's up to 3.3. But something that really caught my eye was, he walked 52 guys last year, and only six of those walks ended up scoring. This year, he's walked 24, and nine of them have already scored. So I don't know if that was just a mix of some good luck, if that was just showing how good he was last year compared to this year, but you're talking about an 11.5% rate of walks scoring last year up to 37%. It's pretty remarkable. So the walks have definitely bit him, and that's something that you could tell he was really frustrated with when he was talking to reporters after the game. So definitely just kind of needs to be able to put some guys away because he's throwing a lot of first pitch strikes. He's throwing first pitch strikes 2/3 of the time. It's a pretty good mark.
Now, it's pretty hard to get the offense to overcome 9 runs by an opponent, but I think that it'd be easier for people to not isolate and try to look at one or two problems with the bullpen or with starting pitching, the former of which is more of a problem, clearly, if the offense had been more consistent. Now, Brandon, they've clearly been better in the last couple games, but mm-hmm. one guy in particular hasn't lived up to expectations, that being Jesse Winker. What do you see from him this year, man?
So a lot of pop-ups, and that's something that really just has never been part of Jesse Winker's game. And he has a lot of power. He's hit home runs in his career, and kind of like what we've talked about in recent weeks, he was brought in to kind of mash right-handed pitching and mash fastballs, and neither of those things have happened. But when you're just looking at his average launch angle, it's about 7 degrees higher than it was last year. So he's not hitting line drives. He's getting under the ball, and he's just not on time hitting the fastball like he was brought in to do. So it's pretty disappointing, and obviously you kind of see some of the frustration with him going, and I thought that he had a few at-bats yesterday that looked like he might have been pressing a little bit, the strikeout he had on a few changes out of the zone after I think taking a pitch kind of over the plate on a fastball. So it could be something where he's starting to press. I know that's something DePoto talked a little bit about, where Jesse put a lot of pressure on himself because he was coming to a new team and he was brought in to be such a key figure, but just hasn't worked out. Just doesn't look like the timing is quite there. There's been a little bit of that unlucky factor, but at the end of the day, your numbers are your numbers, right? And we have about 2 months worth of games to look at. And unfortunately, Jesse Winker just hasn't looked like the same guy that he was last year, really just during his career with the Reds.
Yeah, it really has not. And it's getting to the point, Brandon, where you're really looking at the acquisitions and you're going, man, this team did not get the lift it needed from these acquisitions. What position does that put you in at this point? Now you've gotten some unbelievable performances out of Ty France, out of J.P. Crawford, Julio Rodriguez. You know, Brandon, in terms of being able to make the right moves to get you over the hump and get you into the playoffs, what has really stood out to you as you watch this team try to address some of those issues this offseason, and what could that possibly mean for the future potentially?
Yeah, I think that when you're looking at the four big guys that they added, I don't think that anybody expected to be here at the beginning of June saying Eugenio Suarez has more WAR by himself than Adam Frazier, Jesse Winker, and Robbie Ray combined. I don't think that anybody would have ever thought that that was going to be the case. And part of that is Suarez has exceeded expectations for a lot of people, and the strikeout numbers are obviously really high, but overall he's put together a pretty good season. But I don't think that when entering the season, you were expecting Jesse Winker and Robbie Ray to just take the kind of dives that they have. I mean, I don't think if I was looking at the four guys that they added, I don't think that I would have picked Robbie Ray or Jesse Winker to be like two of the worst players, not just that they added, but just on the team in terms of wins above replacement. There's just no way. As far as what that means for the future, obviously the trade deadline is about 2 months from today, I think. And the Mariners probably aren't going to want to be true sellers in the sense of trading some of their best pieces for prospect capital. They're kind of beyond that point in terms of where they are in the rebuild. But a guy like Adam Frazier, who's a free agent after this year, Chris Flexen, he has some team options after this year, I believe, but it's the last year of his deal. So what do you do with those guys? If Tom Murphy gets back and he's healthy, catcher is obviously very valuable. What do you do with him? If Ken Giles can come back and be healthy, everybody looks for bullpen help. So it's I didn't expect them to be in this spot. I think I talked to Stacey and Michael Bumpus about this before the season, saying I thought they were a more talented team on paper than they were last year, but I thought they were going to win less games. But I didn't expect them to be on this kind of pace where it's like they're on pace for about a 90-loss season. I just mm-hmm. didn't expect that at all.
It sounds like this is something a lot of people didn't expect. We know Jeff Passan, who clearly knows a ton about baseball, is well-connected, was also expecting them to be much better in addition to many other critics and people covering this team. I don't think anyone looked at them and thought, yeah, this is a legitimate, like, they're going to win the AL West. They still had a ways to go. But, I mean, when you look at that holistically, right, you take a step back and you look at, like, the macro view of the team, is it coaching? Is it the way it's built? Is it just rotten luck? Because Brandon, I gotta be honest, I think that there are Mariners fans who would tell you, no, Brandon, don't look at the numbers. The thing is, the team's cursed.
Yeah, of course.
That's
right?
What they would tell you.
You got the Brent Spector Trident talk, right?
Yes,
like,
that is correct.
Everything's cursed. Or, yeah. You know, stadium's on Indian burial ground or something like that.
I think you mean the Brent Spector Trident findings, because he uncovered a truth, is what it is.
That's right, of course. No, I think that when you're looking at just like the organization now, and every player that's there is somebody that was acquired by this front office, right? Like that's kind of been the case the last 2 years or so. Every player that's on this roster is somebody that Jerry Dipoto acquired and that came to the team when Scott Service was manager. So I totally get why people would look at the coaching and the development side of things and maybe question what's going on there. As far as the hitting side, it's especially complicated because I think they've done a pretty good job overall of developing pitchers and not just developing guys that they've drafted and went out and signed, but like guys like Paul Sewald, who was just kind of a castaway and all of a sudden is last year one of the best relievers in baseball. But on the hitting side, it's tough because hitting in today's game is harder than it's ever been, right? Strikeouts are way up and juice baseballs are not. Like there's still a ton of swing and miss in today's game and pitchers are nastier than ever. And it's especially true for young guys. You look at Jared Kelnick and Taylor Trammell, who's back up and hitting well this year, but had just severe struggles last year. I mean, what Julio's doing, it makes it more astounding because young guys just aren't coming up and hitting. But I think that if you're going to look at anything from like an organizational development standpoint, yeah, you can look at maybe the hitting side of things and question whether they're doing the right things or on the right track. What I would say is that the thing that Jerry and Scott talk about, swing decisions are pretty good. They're making a lot of contact in the zone. They're really not chasing outside of the zone. They're swinging at pitches in the zone. They're top 10 in all three of those metrics. The issue is kind of like what we've talked about with Jesse Winker. They're just not hitting the ball hard. They have like two guys in Julio and Ty France that are up there regularly hitting the ball hard. Nobody else is really doing that. So whether that's timing or approach or whatever, we're just not necessarily super privy to that information and those metrics that they use. But I definitely think that just looking at the lineup 2 months into the season, seeing guys just really struggling to square up the ball is definitely concerning.
You know, Brandon, last question here, but, you know, we talked at length yesterday how important it is to stack series wins together. Brandon, at this point, can they afford to drop series wins against teams like the Baltimore Orioles and the Texas Rangers?
No, of course not, because I think it was last week, Jake, we kind of talked about going forward, they had the four series, right? Oakland, Houston, Baltimore, and Texas. And I said, you got to win three of those four. And I still do think that. Now, did I think that Houston would be the one they'd win and Oakland would be the one they lost? No.
Nope.
Did I think that they were going to go into this and think that there's a good chance they're going to lose to Baltimore? Not really, but they've got to stack some series wins together. Some sweeps would be absolutely massive. This team just really has not been able to string together wins since that first homestand, really. And that's pretty alarming. And they played particularly bad on the road. They just can't really afford to do that. June is still a pretty favorable schedule for them in terms of the opponents that they're playing. But they've got to go out and play like they were expected to if they're going to go on a run here. And I know that Jerry and some guys on the team talked about they were in the situation last year. Well, they were five or four games under 500 only like once or twice. They were never 8-9 games under 500 in alternating wins and losses. So they've got even more ground to pick up. It's a really tall task for them.
All right. He is Brandon Gustafson of SeattleSports.com. You can read his work every day at SeattleSports.com. You can hear him on Extra Innings with Curtis Rogers once in a while. Those are on the Mariners off days. Obviously, we have him on to talk about so much of this. Brandon, remind us one more time what you've got coming up SeattleSports.com later today. It's an article on Robbie Ray.
Yeah, just really diving into a lot of the numbers. And like I said earlier, a lot of the advanced numbers and just regular numbers in general are really, really similar to what they were last year. So just trying to kind of dive more into why his ERA is like 2 points higher than it was a year ago and everything like that. That's kind of what I'm working on, and that should be up probably in a few hours here.
All right, so keep your eyes peeled for that one. Thanks so much, Brandon.
Yeah, thanks, Stacey. Thanks, Jake. Take care.
Thanks, Brandon.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. Let's get to Four Down Territory.
This is Four Down Territory, brought to you by Genuine Auto Glass. Going inside the game with quarterback guru Jake Heaps.
Jake Heaps played in the NFL, played quarterback, was in the room with him, was in the fire. He's really a guru. He really played the game.
First down, what was something you heard from Ryan Neal yesterday that had you fired up? Or I shouldn't say Tuesday. Tuesday.
What I heard Tuesday, yeah, cut number 14. Just hearing, you know, the job that Jordan Brooks is doing from a leadership perspective in the absence of Bobby Wagner. Really excited to hear this from Ryan Neal.
I like it because it puts it on his shoulders and it put pressure on him to be better. You know what I mean? And he's done a great job these OTAs of getting guys together off the field. Like, hey, let's all hang out. Let's watch film together. You know, let's watch film after practice. And, you know, you can see him actually stepping up into that role. And I think it'll be better when, you know, we get everybody back. You know, you get your Big Al back and you get Nino and Ma, and then he can actually grow within it some more. And, you know, but the cool thing right now is they're not here. So he has to step up. You know what I mean? It's like you have to speak because we're on you. You know, you the play caller. And, you know, he's getting ready for that role. And I think he's going to be very great at it.
Look, we've said this for a long time. Ryan Neal has a future in the media when he's done, whenever that is. He's an awesome personality, brings great insight. But also when you talk about Jordan Brooks taking ownership of this leadership role and also recognizing that with Quandre Diggs, you know, not really being out there and not being there, Jamal Adams, you know, Al Woods, those guys that are, you know, tremendous leaders for this team, that Jordan Brooks really has to step up and he really has to take ownership of not just being the leader and one of the best players out there for this organization, but also in terms of bringing guys together off the field to take that extra time to study, to take that extra time to make sure everyone is on the same page. And that, to me, is a really positive sign when you have somebody like Jordan Brooks that is willing to take that kind of stuff on and is really rallying people together to help improve one another's game. And that, to me, is really exciting to hear that Jordan Brooks is taking on that owner, is taking on that leadership role. And he learned from one of the best in Bobby Wagner, and it just seems like he's really doing his part to try and make this as seamless of a transition as possible.
Second down. All right, what's the clear mindset of the Seahawks heading into 2022?
Well, I think from cut number 15, Daryl Taylor was originally asked from Cody Barton, and then he just goes off on this tangent about, you know, the team. And hearing Daryl Taylor's excitement is something that really should be paid attention to.
Oh, my God, that dude flies around. And that's what I seen from the first day I got here. And, you know, him stepping up and everything now, it's exciting to see because everybody flying around and all the excitement that we got going around our program and, you know, all the young guys that's coming in, what more can you ask for? We excited. And, I mean, if you don't see that, then I don't know what's wrong with you. But, yeah, we definitely excited. So all I can say is that being here, you know, going from, you know, last year to this year, I think we're excited about where we headed and we're not worried about what anybody else think of us.
So, Stacey, what do I take out of that? The excitement that clearly he has about this team, this organization, it is not new to Pete Carroll, and we've seen this for 12 years. The enthusiasm, the energy, it's off the charts, it's insane. You can't replicate it anywhere else, right? So that's not new to hear that. But it is great to hear a new generation of Seahawk players feeling that energy, feeling the excitement, feeling the opportunity that they know is there to have something that is truly 100% their own. It's not in the shadow of anybody else. There's no superstar right now that everyone's looking to and saying, you're going to be the guy that saves us. You're the one that has all the weight and responsibility on your shoulders. It's really everybody. And if everybody can step up to that challenge and you can create this culture of true accountability and buy-in, then you can have a season that surprises people because you gel together quicker from that understanding. And that is something that I don't know if that's going to translate into wins and losses, but it's something that definitely should be paid attention to as you're talking to players like Daryl Taylor, Jordan Brooks, Ryan Neal, and all those different types of guys.
Third down, not second down. Ryan Fitzpatrick announced his retirement today after a 17-year career. What stands out to you about his career?
Well, my rookie year, I was with the Jets, and it was Ryan Fitzpatrick's best year as a pro. Correlation? I don't know. I don't know. I mean, could be. But, you know, Ryan Fitzpatrick came in as the backup quarterback to Geno Smith that year. And just seeing his work ethic and his preparation, no matter what the circumstances were, he prepared like he was the starter, that he was going to be the starter, and that his leadership ability with guys like Brandon Marshall and Eric Decker and Nick Mangold you know, you look on the other side, there was DeMario Davis and Daryl Revis and all these different personalities. It was just...
They had so much talent
that
time.
They did. They had a lot of talent, particularly that year. They were a good football team, 10-6.
I know that that was Decker after Denver, but still,
yes,
they had some good pieces.
No, Decker was still good for, you know, two more years after that point. But, like, you know, Fitz was a guy that showed up every day at, you know, 5:30 in the morning, 6 o'clock. And when somebody like me, who was a rookie just like trying to scratch and claw his way onto a team every single day, I mean, kept the invitation open out there for me. And hey, if you want to learn how I prep, how I work, how I see the game, you're more than welcome to come. Here's where I'm going to be at. Here's the times. You know, be there or not. It's up to you. And I always loved that and appreciated about that from him and his mentorship. And it's one of the big reasons why he was able to have such an unbelievable career, 17-year career, age 39, walking away from the game and having a lot to show for it, being a seventh-round pick out of Harvard.
Remember when Dave Wyman implied that you were part of the fight with Geno Smith that year?
Yes.
That remains one of my favorite moments. Fourth down.
Gotta love Dave.
Always love tying fourth down, either to a fun question or to the timeline. So coming up in the timeline, I'm going to talk about a job someone very clearly didn't want. Jake, your question for fourth down, what is a job you took on? It could have been to agree to help a neighbor, maybe a friend, whatever it was. A job you agreed to, a task or favor you agreed to that you immediately regretted.
I would say any move. Any move.
Oh, a friend's like, hey, can you help me? And you're like, man, look, once you hit 30, you can call
higher
movers. Higher movers.
Yeah.
Your friends are too old
they don't
to
get
help
paid
you move
pizza.
Stuff. No, not anymore. Not anymore, no.
Well, and also, like, you're there for the long haul. It's not like you could be there for a little bit and be like, oh, got to take off.
You got to show up at, like, 8 a.m.
Yes.
You can't leave until, like,
it's
4 a.m.
We just helped one of my friends move, and it was like, you load up. First of all, you pack up everything. You load it into the truck. The truck
and
goes to a new place. Then you
unload
the truck. It's an apartment, so you have to go up the elevators.
Mm-hmm.
Pivot.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly
that's
what
right.
it is. It was a workout. I have blisters on my hands. I was like, I'm too old for this.
I'm so sorry for you, Stacey.
Oh, sorry, Jake. Your question. Go ahead. Sorry. I'm so used to stealing the spotlight.
But that, to me, is the worst. Or you're like, hey, do you need help moving?
Yeah.
If you do, I am offering, but you've got people for that, right?
Someone told me that's what people in, I shouldn't just say Seattle. It's like a Washington state.
Oh, you actually need me.
It's like, we should get a coffee. You don't mean it. You never want to get a coffee in your life with this person. But it's like, oh my God, do you want help? I want you to say no. I want you to say, don't even worry about it. But I'm extending the nicety of saying, oh my God, do you want help moving? So when you say yes, and I pause and I freeze and I stare at you, it's because you're not following the rules.
And when you say that, it's like you did it. Like, we don't even have to do it. Just you and me knowing that it's a thought on our mind.
It's like I helped you.
I helped you, or, you know, that we did go get that cup of coffee together.
We went and got coffee because we said, let's do that. And you said, yeah. And we were like, great.
These poor folks who aren't
never
from
again.
Around here. People like Mike Lefko, who has this Midwestern sensibility about
him. Friendly.
He does not understand that, like, you may say something here in the Northwest, but it doesn't exactly mean it.
And let me tell you what, I don't feel bad about that. It's a social nicety that I'm just so used to, and that's how life is.
Oh, man.
I don't know what to tell you. Okay, I will tell you about coming up here in the timeline, someone who took a job that he immediately regretted, and it just so happens to be a very, very famous athlete. That's next.
This is The Timeline
with Jake and Stacey.
Brought to you by 1-800-DUIOA.
It is The Timeline on Jake and Stacey this hour, brought to you by Advanced Hair Restoration. The Timeline is where we read you some of the fun stories in sports or trends in sports this week. And we're going to start with one of the biggest trends of the week, biggest stories of the week, which is the weirdest fantasy football fight ever. That one between Tommy Pham and Jock Peterson, where Pham, you guys have already known, the saga continues. It continues. So on Tuesday, we told you about over the weekend, Tommy Pham approaching Jock Peterson before a game and slapping him across the face because of a fantasy football dispute. That dispute, they were both in the same fantasy league, stemming from Jock Peterson saying, look, I had Jeff Wilson, a San Francisco 49ers running back, and he was injured. He was out, so I put him on the injured IR bench. I put him on the bench, and Tommy Pham accused me of stashing players and of cheating. Tommy Pham saying, look, you know, it's implying that it was a little more than that, that it wasn't just Jock Peterson breaking the rules, which, as a fantasy football player, I didn't know that was breaking the rules. It's not just him breaking the rules. It's him being a little disrespectful when I approached him about it. So that's where the fight started. Then, recently, Tommy Pham, who was suspended, said, look, Mike Trout, the commissioner of our league, he's a pretty horrible commissioner, man. He just lets stuff happen. He's joking about it. He's laughing about it, but he kind of pits
but
on
also
Mike Trout's shoulders.
Pretty serious about it.
So that was the update yesterday. Today, the saga continues. Mike Trout asked about what Tommy Pham said about him being the worst commissioner in fantasy football.
What's that? Am I going to resign? I haven't made a decision. I don't know. But every commissioner I know always gets booed. So. No, but it's like I said, you know, Tommy and everybody in that was involved in that. You know, very passionate about fantasy football. I think a lot of people, you know, put their hearts to it. I do too. I lost that league. So.
Did Jack break the rules? Now you're the commissioner, so do the last word.
I'm not answering the question.
Look, the answer is that Jock didn't break the rules.
Come on, Mike.
I'm going to be real with you right now. He did not break the rules.
Step Secondly, up.
Mike Trout saying, yeah, I don't know that I'm going to remain commissioner of now the most famous fantasy football league in baseball.
Look.
Like, I don't know that I want that role again. He took a job he did not want and immediately regretted.
There should be a vote of the friends, the vote of the league to vote Tommy Pham out. I'm not even a part of it, and I think that he should be out. Out. Get out. Okay. That's what they should be doing. If Mike
I'm
Trout
you,
was,
there's always one guy who takes fantasy football
was
way
worth
too
his
seriously.
Salt as a commissioner.
He's clearly not.
That's what he should do. And yes, you're right. I mean, obviously, this is exposing that he is not ready for this type of role. This
Meaning
type
Tommy
of responsibility.
Pham is right. Tommy Pham is right that Mike Trout is the worst commissioner in fantasy football. He allowed two of his league owners to fight each other before a game because he couldn't,
yes.
he couldn't tell one of them that he was either in the wrong or completely fair to put a player who was out on his bench.
Or to tell Tommy Pham to just chill out, bro. Like, it's all good. But, yeah, you're right. He probably should retire. And if they're looking for a replacement for just commissioner,
you're offering your services?
No, I was going to offer your services.
Oh, yeah.
I think that you would be.
I would gladly. Listen.
I think that
Jock
you would be
Peterson,
an excellent commissioner.
Tommy Pham, whatever your fantasy football league is, I am not commissioner of my own league, but I have been in the same league for 5 years. Okay, we're going strong. We're great. I have some people within this market that would co-sign on my fantasy football playing abilities.
Stacey, do you have, though, the kind of financial backing to afford the entrance fee into this kind of league?
No.
I don't know that that's part of the conversation.
I'm just saying.
See, here's the thing.
These guys are dealing with a lot more money than probably
I'm offering your my is. Services. I'm assuming I'm getting paid.
Yeah,
as
Curtis, you're missing out on this.
I'm asking for a salary.
See, Stacey's not even going to participate.
No.
She's not
I'm
one of the competing
third-party commissioners.
I am a third-party commissioner.
Exactly. She's
right.
Roger Goodell, and you're bringing her in.
Yes.
Paying her to settle
million.
All of the
wow.
issues or potential issues
yes.
to this league. Like,
and look, I will take the slings and arrows. You know what I mean? Just like Roger Goodell yes. does and any good commissioner does. I will take the criticism and I will not point fingers. Because it's not who I am.
Really? Because yeah. if I was
Stacey,
Mike Trout,
you seem
I'd
like
be,
the kind of person.
You would. Seem like the kind of person who would point fingers, Curtis.
I would be pointing fingers at Tommy Pham, being like, "Look, dude, this is the guy that's been out of control. He's coming at me as a commissioner. Look at what he has done. Look at the decisions and the choices that he has made recently. And you tell me who's in the wrong."
Tommy Pham, Jock Peterson, and Mike Trout are in this fantasy football league, and they know what they signed up for. They may not have seen it going this way, but they were at least part of it. One person is an unwilling participant. That being the subject of the fight, Jeff Wilson himself, here's what he had to say about being at the center of MLB fantasy football beef.
Actually, Robbie was the first person that told me about it, Robbie Gold. And man, I was like, that was crazy. I guess I was just honored to be in the conversation, you know, and shout out to Jock for having on the team, you know, and taking one for the team.
Robbie Gold being the 49ers kicker that let him know, hey, you're part of this huge fantasy football spat in baseball right now where you were injured and Jock Peterson had you on his team and got in trouble for, you know, putting you on the bench. And Jeff Wilson saying, hey, Shout out to Jack.
Yeah, heck yeah.
I do what I can.
Yeah, having him on his team. I mean, that would be pretty funny to
Jeff
be
Wilson
that.
Was always on, also on my team. I'm just
saying. Oh, was he really?
Yeah.
Okay.
I had many 49ers well, running backs.
Did you? So pretty much any 49er running back that was going to be the starter that week?
Yeah, I also last year got J.D. McKissick. Good pickup, by the way.
That is a good pickup. That's a solid pickup. But Jeff Wilson, I am imagining, did not last as one of your running backs for very long. They were injury-ridden all season long.
Yeah, but that was the best part is you could, not for them, obviously, but you could just pick another running back up and he would immediately be part of the offense and he'd get you like 60 yards or, you know.
Well, that's smart. I mean, look, Stacey, maybe Tommy Pham would have a problem with you, too. You better watch out.
Is that a threat?
I mean, I'm just saying.
Are you Tommy Pham-ing me?
No, I'm not. I'm just saying you better watch out for Tommy Pham because he will have a problem with you.
Last story here, Josh Donaldson. You guys remember he got in hot water and was suspended by MLB after taunting a White Sox opponent, Tim Anderson, calling him Jackie. Short for Jackie Robinson, alluding obviously to, he said, Tim Anderson's article, the interview that he was a part of. But Tim Anderson says, look, we're not friends. We're not tight. You're clearly mocking me. Anyways, Josh Donaldson said he was disappointed his Yankees teammates did not have his back after he called Tim Anderson Jackie.
Oh, poor Josh. Oh,
really? I mean,
you know,
seriously?
When one of your friends is like, in the wrong,
uh-huh,
and they turn to you like, where were you?
It's like, yeah, dude, you gotta own that. Yeah, also, wear just that.
Also, here's the other thing. Was Josh Donaldson teammates with these guys when this first initially happened?
No.
No! They don't know the backstory, so they're not gonna have your back. Like, they don't know what happened beforehand,
yeah,
afterward, like, in the middle, in between. Like, they don't know you, dude. This is your first year with the team. Your first year, and you're causing this problem, and obviously a very sensitive issue. No one's going to have your back in this. You're going to have to wear this on your own and explain it for yourself because, I mean, how could anybody just take your word for it if they're one of your teammates? They don't know how you meant it when you said it to them when you were, what, it was in Minnesota a couple years ago?
Did you just say Minnesota with a Minnesota accent on accident?
I must have.
Did you just hear that, Curtis? Did you hear him say Minnesota?
I did not say Minnesota.
I swear you just said Minnesota.
No, you put a filter in your ear.
No, I heard it. I know that I heard it.
I'm going to go back and listen to it because there's no way that out of nowhere I just said Minnesota.
Well, you didn't say it that strong, but it was like a little bit of like a Minnesota. It was a little bit of a Minnesota.
This also reminds me of the time. You remember Tom Wassel would stop me every time I said Philadelphia? He'd be like, say Philadelphia. You see, like, he was convinced I said it like a Philly fan.
But all
and
of
I'm
a sudden
like,
you'd be like, Philadelphia.
Philadelphia. Like,
you do say it like someone from Philly.
I do not.
Curtis.
I just pronounced the name of the city.
All right. Enough. We're going to have you. Okay, we're going to have Jake just say words during the break while we test out this theory. We're going to come back here. I've got a few more cuts to play you from Jerry DePoto. We're going to wrap up a little bit of a Mariners conversation and then jump ahead to Seahawks. It's all coming your way next.
Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On Seattle's Sports Station.
Here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
All right, we are taking you around the diamond thanks to Shane Company, your friend in the jewelry business. The Mariners take on the Orioles this afternoon for their series finale. Chris Flexen gets the start. First pitch at 4:05 p.m. Pre-game show starts at 3 p.m. right here on Seattle Sports Station. And that's Around the Diamond brought to you by Shane Company. Jerry DePoto was on with Mike Salk this morning. We already went over some of his cuts on Ty France, some of his comments on Jesse Winker and how he can get right, and, of course, on Robbie Ray. If you missed any of that, that's going to be in hour one of the Jake and Stacey Show podcast. That, by the way, is uploaded every day around 3 p.m. If you're subscribed, it automatically downloads to your phone. So again, you can hear that on the Mike Salk Show, the full interview, and you can hear some of our recap of the first half of the interview in hour one of Jake and Stacey. I want to continue, and I want to get to one cut, one piece of sound. That's what we're looking at right now. But
just one?
One piece of sound, but I think it's an important one. This is Jerry DePoto talking about how he sees this team's talent compared to last year's.
Last year's team was such a resilient, bounce back oriented team, and not to be demeaning to that team in any way, because it's one of the funnest teams that I've ever been around. But this team has more talent than that team, and you know, we're still trying to find the personality here, and And we have good players in the primes of their career. We have young players with tremendous upside. We have veteran players who've accomplished a lot. And whatever expectations we have or the media has had for us, our players share those expectations and in many ways have driven us to perform, to get mm-hmm. better.
Now, all of this is great. I have no strong critique except for one teeny tiny comment, which is I don't know that I would put the onus on the media for having high expectations of this team when Jerry DePoto is the one who said, look, we're going to contend.
Mm-hmm.
This is what we're looking at. This is our window. And you gave us a date, and that's why we have high expectations. I mean, then you got Baseball America with your top farm system. But again, you set the tone. The Mariners came out and said, we are ready to contend. Here's this farm system we're excited about. These two players, Jared Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez, we think can be special. We think they can be superstars. And we are ready to contend. We're in a retooling right now, and here's where we're aiming. And at the time, it was like 2021, but then COVID happened, and that shortened the development for a lot of your players who were in the minors. Prolonged, really, because it ended that season. So, fine, you move it to 2022. But the idea was out there because those are the expectations that Jerry DePoto had for a squad.
Yeah.
So, even though he's not – I want to make it clear. I'm not hearing this as Jerry DePoto saying, yeah, the media has these expectations. But I don't divvy up that responsibility for where those expectations come from.
Right. Because they come from one clear place, right?
Yeah.
Who?
Jerry DePoto.
Well, there you go. I mean, I think that when you talk about the expectations that this fan base has, it is really derived from, yes, the exciting finish of the 2021 season, the accelerated process of you seeing J.P. Crawford come to life. Ty France, obviously having the year he had. Mitch Haniger, right? I mean, you're looking at some of these pieces that you know will be a part of the team the following year and knowing that this team can be better. And it wouldn't take a whole lot for the roster to be improved. I mean, right? I mean, it would adding just a couple veteran players to the 2021 season, and that team would have been drastically improved. It would have been. Now you go into this year, and you have the skipper, you have ownership, you have Jerry DePoto all coming out and saying that the expectation now is playoffs, that we are, you know, getting ready to spend money, that we believe in this team, and now we feel like we're in a different transition from rebuilding our roster and being in that developmental mindset to now we are competing. Now we are pushing for playoffs. Now Scott Service isn't talking about guys that just are given spots. You got to go earn your spot. You know, you remember that conversation? Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a totally different change in that mentality. And so when you're looking at the team right now, yeah, talent-wise, you can say that you feel like you are a better team than last year. However, we're now June 2nd. You have to prove it. You have to go out there and show that that is the type of team that you have because you can't keep saying that. If you can't put together and start stringing together series wins and actually start, you know, making a run here and overcoming the deficit that you've created for yourself, you can't say you're better than 2021. You can't say that, even when you're more talented. I don't want to hear that, right? I want to see you do it. And so that's why, you know, this game tonight against the Orioles means a heck of a lot for this team.
Mm-hmm.
The series against the Rangers mean a heck of a lot for this team. And yeah, it's still, quote unquote, early in the season, but every game matters, and you have already put yourself in a position where you have to play exceptionally well. You have to play as one of the best teams in baseball from this point forward to give yourself a chance to compete for the playoffs. That is the cold, hard facts.
We're in a little over a month away from the All-Star break, too. I'm getting so irritated by people saying, oh, it's so early. Wait and see what this team can become. It's June.
Mm-hmm.
It's June. I think what's very clear is that this team is, on paper, better than it was last year. But the problem is it needed to be a lot better than it was last year. First of all, last year, to get to 90 wins, you needed to exceed so much of your expectations that you knew heading into this year that you could improve the team and finish with fewer wins, that both of those things could be true.
Mm-hmm.
And right now you're on very much on pace to do that, to have improved the team and finish with fewer wins. But you didn't improve the team so drastically that you had a lot of wiggle room either. You added a Cy Young winner, fantastic. You brought in Jesse Winker, who's played well for the Reds. Great, fantastic. You made a few other smaller moves, and prior to this, you'd made moves that everyone now can see the benefit of, like adding Ty France via trade with San Diego. But again, you didn't do enough. You have to live up to those expectations, though.
Yes, you do.
Find a way to do it.
Yeah, and you can't fall back on excuses. Well, this didn't go our way, that didn't go our way. And although some of those may be true, you can't point to that. You can't go to that as an excuse as to how you didn't do enough when you said you were going to, right? You're all in or you're not. And that to me is the conversation here. And when I say all in, I don't mean, you know, blow out your budget and all of that. But what I mean is if you're truly, truly committed to making this a playoff team, your actions follow up and they match your words.
All right, going pretty NFL heavy here. We're going to talk about the Seahawks defense, some improvements that you could see this year and what might be the catalyst for that. We're going to take a look around the NFL, big retirement news there. And then we're going to also take a look a bit more at some young Seahawks players that we're tracking. All of that coming your way next.